Okay, so this is the Law Enforcement Advisory Committee meeting for Monday, November 19th. It's City Hall, 6 p.m. Steve, could you take a roll, please?
Okay, John Whitman.
Here.
Eric Reynolds.
Here.
Jay Wasserman.
Here.
Richard Murd.
Here.
Ruben Ibarra.
Here.
Tom Dodge.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Rossini.
Here.
Wayne Zazel. Lieutenant Rich.
Here.
And myself, Steve Franks.
We have one more gentleman behind you.
Councilman.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Okay, so we'll move to public comment. We do have a member of the public here.
I would like a couple comments, but my particular thing might be better under the monthly OCSD report, the crime stats, because it has to do with the process on how you handle calls and how they end up on the blotter.
Okay.
And so I'll either say it now if you want to know, or I'll wait till then, because I know there's
Lieutenant, what would you prefer?
When it's on an agenda, you know.
I would much rather just let's have it.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see what we got, and let's address it if we can.
Here's my problem. I got involved politically last month at a city council meeting based on I didn't want people to have signs being taken down, and I spoke. Now, there also, which all of you know, there was a hit piece out, too. I wasn't dealing with that. I was dealing with the sign issue that was taken down of Mr. Cullicott's. I'm very, very against other people taking down people's signs. And before I spoke, I had emails from the sheriff inspector that said that the deputy did not go over to Mrs. Fasanelli's house and interview her. So there was a big thing, if you listen to city council, a lot of stuff went back and forth whether or not it did. Just to give you a little bit of the background on it is Mrs. Fasanelli talked to me at the end of the meeting. She then, the next day, sent me out an email. She gave me the case number. I also got the case number from Mr. Cullicott, too. And for any of you that don't know this, I used to be a policy advisor for Supervisor Morlock. And Steve can testify. I'm very, very detailed. And so I was trying to figure out what is the problem in the city as far as getting information to the people if they want it, because it's contradictory. The one emails, and it may be just a procedural deal that the lady who was doing the investigation didn't talk to Mr. Oda, who evidently, or Oda, was the guy who did it. I don't know where the problem is, but there is definitely a problem in the credibility of this whole deal, and it seems to be falls on the sheriff's fault for this. Now, I got emails from Mr. Cullicott and Mrs. Fasanelli to the case number. They both sent me the case number. I went to the sheriff's blotter. It's not up there. It doesn't show up there. So I knew it was about October 1st. So I ended up calling the sheriff's department and asking them, why isn't this showing up? And the lady I spoke to said, oh, well, that case number is not the same thing. You have to have the call number or another number. So she gave me another number. And that other number is then what shows up on the sheriff's blotter. And it doesn't show up like it used to at all. All it showed up is petty theft. And in the past, there was more description on these, on what had happened. So I felt I wasn't going to do anything before the election because this was getting too, he said, who said, Mrs. Fasanelli sent this email to me, and then she blanketed a whole lot of people on it, too. So I thought, I'm not getting involved in that before the election. I'll wait till afterwards, and if I need to correct something, I will correct something. So that's what I'd like to know is, why is there this big discrepancy, and where does it fall? And how can it be corrected?
Well, I think part of the issue is that we're going to a new system from a CAT system that used to categorize everything by call number. And now we we have what's called a field-based reporting system, where deputies write their reports online, basically. It's a computer-generated system. And that's where the DR, or the case number, comes from. Now, when everything is dispatched, there is a call number assigned to it, which is the other number.
And they used to be the same.
They used to be the same.
Yeah, okay, I didn't
say, well, that's what it is. Yeah. You need to know this. And
We're going through transition. We're going through transition.
I figured it was part of proper process.
Every time a deputy is dispatched to a call, every time they generate a call, they do a vacation check, a pedestrian check, a vehicle stop, anything like that, it is assigned, and they let their dispatch know, or they put themselves out on the radio, it is assigned a call number, which is now what is tracked in CAD. And not until they tell the dispatcher that they actually need a case number is the DR, or the case number, assigned to that. Before, historically, with the Sheriff's Department, we would, every time they did something, it was assigned, it was the same number. And the issue was is that that number got so large, it wasn't a true accounting of actual cases and incidents that they needed to categorize for UCR stats, as an example, or what needed to be reported to the FBI. So they went in, and we have a new system that's in place, and every time they do something, it's assigned a call number. And not until they tell the dispatcher they need a case number, they have a crime, or they have an incident that they need to write something about, is it assigned a case number or a DR number. So that's where the confusion lied in that. It was on the blotter under the call number. And if you look under the case number, and I'm going to have to look into this, I'm assuming that they don't talk right now. And that's one of the things that we're working through, is a lot of incidents where we have the call numbers generated and things are tracked by call numbers, but it's not talking to the case number, if that makes sense. So they're not linking up. So if you search the case number.
How long have you been doing this transition?
This is the fourth month. It has been in North Patrol for, this is the start of our third month.
And I think it almost sounds like, too, she's also sounds like she's referring to the blotter used to have a lot of information on it, so you might want to touch on that as well, because even I know before this new system, you guys got rid of this, where the sergeants were going in and editing the blotter and then posting stuff, so it's very generic now. I know it's changed. Is that right?
Well, one of the issues was that too much information was coming out in the blotter, and some of that information was sensitive information that we legally should not have been releasing, or that may have hampered investigated efforts. So we were putting out too much information and stuff that, with an active case, should not be released to the public, because if the people that are involved in those crimes see this information, it may hamper our ability to investigate. I can tell you this, with that whole incident, and I was on vacation during that city council meeting, so I wasn't here. Unfortunately, I could have cleared that up a lot. The investigator who handled that case was incorrect in stating that Deputy Oda did not speak to Ms. Fasanelli. He did. He went down, he talked to everyone on that street, or most people on that street, regarding that the signs, or the missing signs that were reported. Talked to a lot of them, asked them if they had a sign in their yard, if they had any video cameras, or that may have videotaped something. So he did a very extensive investigation himself. How the investigator did not know that when she was contacted, I cannot explain, because it was all there, and most of that was included in his report.
Okay, you're right, because that's good. I mean, that's fine if that's the correct story, because her comments, which I relied on when I spoke, was this: thank you for this email and advising me of the situation. I did some research and discovered where Mrs. Fasanelli lives, and her address was not one of the addresses that the deputy went to during the canvass of the area on the day he took the report. Also, I have not been to that address either during my investigation either. I have forwarded your email to my lieutenant to advise him of the situation as requested. Thank you for your time and patience on this matter. So, did she just read the report wrong?
I don't think he included that address in his report.
Oh, so he didn't include...
He didn't include the address. He had a list of addresses that he went to. He had a list of addresses that was... He logged as an addendum or a supplemental that basically that Mayor Kolakot told him yards that he had signs in. And he went to talk to each of them to confirm that they had signs in there. And yes, the signs were missing and it was done without their permission. And also went up and down the street in the area asking homes if they had any video cameras, anything that may have caught, you know, what was going on too. Okay. So we could show that.
Well, I'm just glad that at least there's a legitimate...
I did... And I'm sorry, not to overtalk you. I did share that information with both Ms. Fasinelli and Mr. Kolakot as far as the case number. So that's the information when they got that case number that came from me.
I know, but as I'm saying, you have the case number. You can't go on the bladder and read anything about.
That is something
that case number does not give you anything. You have to go through a whole tangle in order to find out what the number is that it's related to on the bladder.
That is,
so hopefully we'll see some improvement.
Unfortunately, I can't speak to that. I will tell you that I will be looking at that tomorrow and make sure that everyone is aware of that issue. And if they're not talking, which the only, what I'm hearing here, I can only assume they're not, is I will address that and see what we can do to make sure that they link up.
Okay, well, that's all. I'm sorry it took so much of your time.
That's quite all right.
I don't need, I'll sit here for a little bit just to listen to what you go on, just so I know this area. I'm done bothering you now.
You live down in that area?
No.
Okay.
I live over on Workman.
Chad, did you have anything you wanted to add at all?
No? Just listening.
Okay, great. All right.
That's where I
am. So let's go on to item 3 and approve minutes from the September 10th meeting. And someone's got a motion to approve. Let's hear it. A second?
Second.
All right. Motion and a second, so minutes are passed for September 10th meeting. All right, move on to regular business items. Start with an update on the transient situation. I would imagine, Steve, you might have an update on that.
The cities of Anaheim, Orange, Santa Ana, Costa Mesa, I believe, have signed settlement agreements, or at least set a date to sign the settlement agreements on the homeless issues. They are still working with, as part of their agreements, there's some shelters that will be built in Anaheim. And in the North Service area, which includes 13 cities, are also building a homeless shelter in Placentia and Buena Park. And we're part of the North Service area. And at this point, they're working on the potential of everybody sort of chipping in to fund that. To the extent that those would be built, then the settlement agreements would be extended to those 13 cities, and they would be allowed to enforce their no camping ordinances and excluded. The South County cities have chosen to go another route, and that's through a legal firm. And I believe that's the best update I can give without going into too much detail.
Okay. You got anything?
If I can continue a little bit more on that, I'd just like to, number one, thank the city manager, Mr. S.D. Franks, and the entire city, because I can tell you from sitting on the outside and seeing the things that have been going on with this, the North Spa, including the city of Villa Park, has been very proactive in addressing these issues and making sure that they are in the forefront of protecting their citizens and being able to enforce the anti-camping ordinances and muni codes when need be. And by being in the forefront of this and settling this issue, and making sure that they have homeless shelters where they can refer homeless people to, they really make the law enforcement aspect of this and our ability to enforce these anti-camping ordinances, given the way it's looking for the county and the whole country with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decisions that are out there. So I'm really happy to see this, and I think it's the Boise case, yes. If something does come up in the city, and I think you know, we're starting to see the calls, and the deputies are very fortunate to have the ability to enforce this and be proactive in that, and it's really going to help keep this city and protection of the citizens of Villa Park from safe and secure in their homes.
What case were you referencing?
The Boise decision, which basically said that the Ninth Court Circuit Appeals, Court of Appeal, ACLU sued the city of Boise because they were enforcing anti-camping ordinances. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals basically said that there had to be 100% beds available. Otherwise, homeless could sleep on public property and you couldn't arrest them.
Oh, I didn't, okay, I know the judge was trying to use that, but I didn't realize.
Well, it extends beyond even what Judge Carter was saying, because it's 100%. So the reality is, to the extent that you can get the ACLU and the parties to agree to what percentage that we're going to get here is a positive move. And they want to see some movement, and there is no movement in the past on some of the areas. So the other areas, I mean, Santa Ana has agreed. I don't know what Costa Mesa is doing. I don't really know, because we've got our own issues that we deal with, and I don't really want to get into theirs. But basically, the Ninth Court Circuit, if that ruling extends, it's going to be very challenging anywhere to enforce. Anywhere. I mean, because that's 100%. I mean, that means a person could sleep right outside City Hall and you can't do anything about it, unless they're violating the law. Now, what we'll have the ability for the deputies to do is to enforce the anti-camping ordinances and loitering ordinances and sleeping and all those kinds of things. Obviously, they'll have three choices when they come up to them. They can either help them go to a shelter. They'll either help them move along on their own volition, or they can go to jail.
But those ordinances will only do that. That's temporary.
No, the ordinances will be in effect if we get the settlement, which we're going through for North County. So that'll enable him. That what he's saying.
But if it doesn't,
if the deputy, yes.
If it doesn't,
someone can set their tent out in the parking lot out there.
And we just got to smile and say,
thank you very much.
You could actually arrest him, and then when it goes to court, kick it.
We couldn't even arrest them. We would be in violation of civil rights if we arrested them through that Boise decision. What? Having these shelter beds available and being part of the spot and being part of that whole thing is it allows the deputies to say, hey, you know what? I have a shelter bed available. If this person had chose to accept these accommodations and accept that shelter bed, I could help them. They're refusing, the bed's available, they can go to jail or they can be cited.
I was under the impression that this shopping center was private property, not city property.
Yeah, but that they can sit on the parking lot right out here, or they can sit right out here in the library.
Yes.
The easement right there. They can sit on all the streets, on all the easements or anything. That's pretty much anything that's a public easement they would have access to. They could sleep on the sidewalks, which, you know, right in front of the high school, public property. We couldn't do anything about it unless. So we have to have, like the lieutenant says, we have to have an ability to say you have an option. And now that they have an option, they're violating the law. The judge says, yep, there's options, and they're not choosing to exercise them. Okay. They can go to treatment. I guess that's another option. They can go to treatment.
It's basically accept services.
Or go to jail.
Move along, or we have an option for you. We have services for you. Go to jail. And that's where the whole issue was, is basically Boise was trying to say, hey, you know what? You can't stay here. We don't have shelter beds for you, but you can't stay here. You got to move on. And they were arresting people. And they said it was cruel, unusual punishment. You can't criminalize a status offense. The only reason they're violating these laws is because they're homeless. And that was how
if you're familiar with what a mess can be, if you went to the Tustin Library, if you remember what happened to Tustin Library, they were literally camping out there, and the city of Tustin could do nothing about it until they came to. That's why they are building a shelter at this point. Even though it's an emergency short-term shelter, they're building it because otherwise they can't enforce, and they'll be held in contempt of federal court.
Downtown Santa Ana.
They've settled, so they've got beds available. So they are enforcing. So if you go to the courthouse and you've seen what they've done around the courthouse and around the Civic Center, it's changed a lot within the last couple of weeks. You're seeing a lot more enforcement.
We also have to be in a defensible position in the surrounding cities, because a lot of those people don't want to accept services. And if you don't, you know, if someone's enforcing and someone has a shelter bed and the surrounding areas don't, it's just going to push those people out of that, you know, that area, out of the city of Orange, out of Santa Ana, and they're going to migrate, you know, this way where we do not want that to happen. So we need to make sure that we're in a position to, you know, take similar action.
And we've had reports. We've had people sleeping on private roads. We had a person sleeping on the library steps the other day. So it happens. I mean, it's just... We need to keep on moving.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why don't we segue into a monthly OCSD report. So, Lieutenant Rich?
That would be me. For the month of October, we have a total of 7 reportable Part 1 crimes. 2 of those were residential burglaries on 1022 in the 10,000 block of Ludwig. We had a burglary that occurred while the residents were out of town. And that was entry through a front window, or excuse me, a side window. On 10-8, on the 18,000 block of Wind Circle, someone entered a unlocked but closed garage door, or excuse me, garage, and stole some high-value golf clubs, gift cards, and a bicycle. In the 1800 block of Canyon Circle, a vehicle was locked on a driveway overnight. Entry was forced into that, and miscellaneous items that were in plain sight were taken out of that vehicle. We had 2 thefts from vehicles. Both of those vehicles were unlocked and occurred on the 20th of October in the on Bertie Lomas and Mariposa Drive. One of them they lost was a laptop, and the second one numerous items, pink slip, sunglasses, small value items were taken, but quite a lot out of both of those vehicles, and those were parked and unlocked in the driveway. And we had 2 petty thefts reported on 10-11, one from the high school. A cell phone was taken out of a student's locker. And then on the 1st of October, one from City Hall, and it was for a police report was filed for missing political signs in the area.
Seems like the common denominator was either unlocked or keeping things in plain sight when someone peeks in. So
a lot of the crimes that occur in this area are crimes of opportunity. Yep. It's someone who is out on vacation and someone realizes that the house, no one's at the home, or people are walking down the street and they're looking for unlocked car doors or things that are in plain sight that they can steal and make off with, very easily. And as we normally say in the meetings, hey, you have to protect yourself no matter what you're doing. Have to protect yourself. Lock your home, lock your cars, don't leave things in plain sight, and your chances of being a victim of crimes are much
the
less.
The burglaries, the residential burglaries, do they appear to be daytime? Or were the time frames able to be narrowed down?
One was overnight, and that was a garage. Okay. They made entry into the garage. And then the other one, it was a span of 12 days. They don't know when it occurred. There were no video surveillance. Yeah. There was no alarm, and it was while they were away on vacation.
Okay. Was that not locked? Did they notify the city for a vacation check?
They did not.
Very useful tool.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yes, sir.
The vacation check, is there a list that's kept, and where is that list kept? Is it? I'm assuming it's private.
It is private. The deputies and the reserves and the PSRs that work the city have access to it.
Okay.
And they are actually very good about going out and conducting vacation checks.
I had, surprisingly, 2 different people that I talked to as I canvassed the city who asked about, they were worried about that the vacation check being used for criminals to see where people were absent.
Yes. I would be disturbed if someone who was
we don't
had
have
those
access
intentions.
To the city, so I can't tell you.
Right. I thought sure that seems silly that police that are doing it or that would know if somebody was tailing.
Plus, you would have a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
So
someone's going to access
just,
this.
In order to follow up, I was just curious about
it is kept in a confidential area where no one outside of the law enforcement field.
I wouldn't have even thought of that as a.
A couple significant events in October. On 10-2, there was a DUI arrest in the city. That subject was stopped for a traffic violation, was arrested for DUI, and a loaded firearm was also recovered from the vehicle. Incident to arrest. On the 9th, we were very fortunate to participate with the SROs in the National Walk to School event for Sarahville Middle School. And then on the 24th, Villa Park Police Services assisted Villa Park Elementary with their bike rodeo. So deputies and SROs got to participate in that, had a good time bonding with the children. And calls for service for the month, and this includes all calls which are self-initiated and dispatch calls, over 463 in October. Now that is up substantially from 291 the year previous, but that is a little deceiving, as actual calls for service were down by 40, but deputy-initiated calls and calls that were put in the CAD were up by 211. So they're out there talking people, stopping cars. A lot of those are also vacation checks. So, you know, we've got a group of young deputies that are very motivated, and they're out working and trying to be proactive and keep crimes from occurring. There are also 34 traffic citations and 18 parking citations issued for the month. Consumed time, total consumed time was just over 50%, 5-0.
And Wayne Silzel is here.
You have this chair. I was just ready to leave. And this works out. No. I already had my say. This will work out just perfect.
And that was a vehicle into a residence.
Thank you for
my honor.
Thank you, Kathy. See you. Have a good night.
Yes, no, I was here for what I came for. Thank you very much.
Anything else?
No, sir.
Well, Wayne, you're just in time because we're at Neighborhood Watch. So if we could get an update on that.
My wife corrected me when I put down 6 o'clock on my calendar. She said it's 6:30.
It used to be 6:30.
Well, I would admit, I'm sorry, gentlemen.
But all right.
We'll accept your apology, especially if you have an update for the score of the football game.
I haven't turned down.
It was 13-0 when I left the Rams.
We counted on you for so little.
Jeez, you know, this has been an interesting week. I missed 2 meetings this week because I got a day behind. Anyway, no, I don't have. I would travel, and I could tell you all about Lisbon and the Azores.
I'd love to hear.
That's good,
it's interesting.
And I did remove the campaign sign from his yard.
Oh, yes.
After the election.
After the election. Post-election.
And he and a deputy met on my driveway and were talking. I got a call from a second neighbor who said, "Say, something's going on in your house because there's a deputy out there." And I hear from Tom, "It's just me. I was visiting with my deputy."
Yeah. I was doing vacation check too.
Anyway, we really appreciate Neighborhood Watch. I mean, visitation, a vacation.
Vacation.
Yeah. Killing me, dude.
Very nice.
I'm scattered here.
That's all right. I was looking at that, and they did a lot of them last month. They were
awesome.
Very, very active on those.
The proactive activity is huge. It is so huge.
Yeah, that's
for
huge.
A city. I mean, no disrespect to those that came before, the deputies that we have here right now. They were great deputies and did their own thing. But I'm so appreciative of their hard work, their attitude, their eagerness to go out there and serve the public and make contact. And sometimes it's just a consensual encounter saying hello. But that can make a huge difference in the perception of residents and really community-based policing. So kudos to you and your tenure and all of the deputies.
Thank you very much. I will continue to share that with them because they love to hear that.
Yeah,
so you're
I need the crime stats and some traffic collisions.
You want to meet with Lieutenant afterwards?
I hate to ask him to do that. How about?
We'll have him shoot over to you.
Can you do that?
I can share him with you.
I'll get to it. Yes. Marshall, me and I'll get
to it. The only thing to report is this is of course the season for scams, particularly on computer. And I had one resident who's whined about the fact that she'd paid money twice before, and these people just don't listen to me when I tell them I'm not going to buy anything, and I've done this before, and I know you're not. How can I know that you're real? I'd be glad to give money. These people are so gullible. It's the only thing I can say.
And the people that are calling are very, very, very persuasive. I actually have a need to working on a public service announcement.
Good.
Not as much in Villa Park, but I know some of our other areas, similar geographic, are, as far as the makeup, Rossmore has been getting hit pretty hard with a lot of callers calling people and saying, hey, your grandson, your granddaughter has been arrested or they've been in an accident and they need money right away, send $5,000 to this address or go buy gift cards for $5,000 and send it to me here and I'll represent your thing. So a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately amazing. By the time they figure it out, it's too late. The money's gone. And we've been able to recover some from, Western Union and stuff like that going overseas. But if it's in gift cards, it's as soon as they call them with those numbers, it's gone and we cannot recover it. So we're gonna be getting all the the social media stuff we can and through the neighborhood to watch out. You know, if you think something isn't right, please ask someone. Call, ask the sheriff's department, call city hall, call a friend, call your children, grandchildren, whatever it is, and say, hey, someone's calling me in this, is, and just take 1 second just to ask someone else, and it'll end up saving you in the long run, because it's these people are very persuasive, and unfortunately, you know, everyone wants to help, and as soon as you say your grandson or your granddaughter is in trouble,
bingo, we're ready to help.
You're going to jump in everything you can, and it's, I've seen it where people are maxing out credit cards just to go send money overseas, and it's heartbreaking, and if we do anything to keep that from happening, we need to do that.
I find it very ironic, because the majority of the calls I get are supposedly the IRS calling me, that you're subject to arrest. I said, yeah, well, you should be aware you called the tax office. They hang up.
I had a call, my daughter, she was 14 at the time, very similar, and I walked home, you know, walked in the house one day, and she was 16 at the time, and she looked at me with this stark white, Dad, what is going on? We can't pay our bills, we're going to lose our house. There's a message on there from the IRS. And no, like, yeah. Sweetheart, the IRS will never care to call the house, it's a scam. But it probably took me 15 minutes to convince her of that, because she was just...
It's too bad.
Yeah.
I'm telling people, just hang up and call.
Exactly.
Just hang up.
Yeah.
If they're somebody you know, they're going to call you right back.
Absolutely.
So be rude.
Yeah.
Hang up. If you're not certain and you don't know who that is. So, now, I don't know if they're doing it, but that's, I'm not very patient. I listen to the whines. I think, you know, a person can be dumb for about three of these things, and then you should know, read the paper, read the neighborhood watch bulletins. So I guess I'm just getting old and impatient. It's a stupid problem to have.
It is, but we need to get it out there because it's a continual problem.
Almost the other bad is not locking your car.
Yeah. The other is package snatching.
That
off doorstep. That's another
place.
One.
Well, have you heard about that other scam now too? Is you got this someone that sends stuff out to men and claims that you've been caught cheating on your wife, and they're asking for money to keep from spreading the rumors to your wife. So obviously, men that are being unfaithful are falling for this all over the place. So something to think of. If you know anyone that's unfaithful, or maybe anyone that's got some skeletons, beware. That's another scam that's going across the airways right now.
I'd be good there, because I got to tell you, I'm afraid to do that.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because my wife got one right after I got back from Vegas, and was like, honey? and then, of course, about 2 weeks later, I see the article about it. I says, here, this is going around right now.
Somebody's sitting here, wait a second, here's my wife.
I wish somebody'd send me one of those. We went on our trip to celebrate our 59th anniversary, and my wife would think that's pretty remarkable that this guy's out there.
Well, Amazon sells little, I guess they're just kind of boxes. You know, it says adult books and stuff like that, but it's just kind of like a gag joke, and you mail it to friends and, you know, stuff of that nature.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, they're hitting on all ends, too. It used to be that the IRS calls used to be just landline, but now they're hitting cell phones and everything now. I mean, it's like the calls I get on my cell phones now are just, it's amazing.
I get two or three a week.
Oh, yeah.
These lines spoofing, and it's right next to a number. It's very similar to a number that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
The prefix.
Yeah.
Show that to a lawyer. Anything else on Neighborhood Watch?
No robo. No robo call is a free app, and everybody should have it on there. That'll stop all those. Your phone will ring once, and that's it. So don't answer the phone till the second call, and you won't have to put up with robo calls.
AT&T has that, too. All you have to do is just enter your number into it, and it'll do it automatically.
That's right. And it's working. And it's particularly good on cell phones, because cell phones seem to be hitting more.
Yeah.
Well, they want to find your location, I think, is what they're doing. At any rate, that's all I have.
Wayne, real quick, how's membership?
I haven't checked it since we haven't had any withdrawals.
Okay, that's all. We're probably still well over 200, then, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And a lot of people rely on their neighbor to tell them. And I wish they'd just get on the list, because it's simple enough to add.
Right.
Do you still send out a newsletter, too?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't know the week.
She got one just the other day. Yeah. She sent the scams.
Right.
On the scams she sent out.
I don't know. I think we're sending them to all of you.
Yeah. I don't recall seeing one.
Yeah, good, because we're supposed to be. This committee should get them. It's easy enough to add your name to the
taken over.
These have to be sent out in groups of about 30 names because internet doesn't like you to send more than about 30 people receiving your email. So you've got to, we have to bunch them. And so we send them out in groups. So when somebody says they're not getting it, that triggers us to go in and double check to see if it's our fault or if there's been a kickback on a group. I don't know about this, but if you have group mailings in your phone that you've, like LEAC, if you have all of our emails in there and you use that group email and so that you don't have to put in every name, that works great. But if one of us changes their email address, your old email address will stay in the group even though you changed it under your contacts. So if you change your email address, remind people, check your group emailings too if you belong to.
And one cautionary note on a group mailing of all email addresses of any city committee, you're subject to the Brown Act. So if something is going to be on the agenda, on the agenda or is potentially an agendized item, thou shalt not send a group text. Do it individually or do it through Steve. If we need to get a mass communication out, Steve can blind copy each individual and therefore accomplish the same task without anybody violating the Brown Act. So just be wary of that. That's all. And Chad, that'll be note to self on that.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, let's go to item D, professional services responder program. Anyone got any updates on that? Tom or Jay or?
Still just three of us that I know of.
Okay.
And I don't even know how to reach the other two.
Well, it sounds like you guys are getting out and doing the vacation check. So the three we got sounds like you guys are doing a great job. So.
I stepped out of that when
you did?
Michael Lee took it over.
Oh, okay.
For the city.
All right. Good enough.
And they're still taking the car out. I checked the list.
Yeah, I saw it out the other day.
Maybe you ought to get a hold of Mike Lee and see if I can start communicating with you.
I kind of hate to disturb him since he's
at
school.
No, that's his job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, item E, crime prevention and traffic safety. In discussion of new ideas and or proposals. And also a subsection A for pedestrian signage and an update on placement. So
We've ordered signs for pedestrians on Serrano, and I think we're also putting in a sign for Villa Park Road and Center. We'll have some sort of signage. Now that one's a little more difficult because that's a metered intersection, so we're limited to what we can or can't do there. But we'll have signs that are on order, and they'll be put in probably, I'm guessing, by the time they make them as you order them. They're not like pre-stocked. So we'll have those, I'm sure, by the time the kids get back from school.
Any new ideas? Anyone got anything that's come up or anything at all?
I know there's some things in the works, I should say, and looking forward to those. The handicap access curb cuts, I think, is a pedestrian safety issue, and I know that Steve's diligently working with ACMA on that. We're trying to get some of our projects done. As far as traffic that affects Villa Park, but its origins are outside of Villa Park, I've had a discussion with Mayor-elect Mark Murphy of Orange, along with our current mayor, Bob Colicott, and we discussed some challenges that the city of Orange is facing that do significantly impact our city. And obviously there's no 5-minute solution. These are solutions that will take years and loads of money. But he's very receptive to meeting and discussing and recommended that meet on a quarterly basis to try to make sure that we're able to accomplish things together. We do have the intersection of Taft and Santiago that we're looking at. Hopefully we can get a different level of cooperation and involvement with Orange
this next year. I know they've had a lot on their plate and are working real hard on projects within their city. But that's all I have.
I just got one thing that's kind of, and I've mentioned it in the past, and I haven't seen any action ever taken on it, but there's no crosswalks at all at Lemon and Santiago. And I walk that all the time. So I'm crossing Lemon going down Santiago, and there's a guy going north on Lemon, and he stops the stop sign. I look at him and figure, okay, he's giving me the green light to start walking. I walk and I get right in front of his car. There was a lady about 30 feet behind me. All of a sudden, he guns it and takes off, and I thought I was going over his hood. Mm. He stopped about 2 feet short of me, you know, and I'm sitting, and it dawned on me and reminded me again that there's no crosswalks at Lemon and Santiago. So it's, you know, and, you know, people walk that area quite frequently, you know, and there's still nothing marked there. So we can get some crosswalks in there. That'd be nice.
Will the signal light accommodate a pedestrian signal as well?
I don't think we need that. We just need a crosswalk. I think it would make people a little more.
I don't
aware
think it
of
would meet the warrants there, would it?
Yeah,
doesn't seem like it would have enough traffic.
And correct me if I'm wrong. In the last minutes, we discussed last meeting of striping and labeling, and that's in the works.
That's being done as part of the road project, and sort of, you know, and we're sort of figuring if we wait long enough, the water district Serrano will have to pay for all our repaving because of all the main breaks that we've had recently. But actually, that's in process as part of the contract.
Right.
We just haven't been dealing with it yet.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay, item F, emergency preparedness. Vince, do you want to tackle that one? Yeah, I think you probably got some pretty good information on that one.
Yeah, we had the OCFA.
No.
OCFA Wildfire Preparedness Town Hall. We had a town hall on the 25th. It was a very successful meeting. Roughly 20 or so residents.
I was there. It was well done.
John was there, and I want to thank not only Orange County Fire Authority, but also the Orange County Sheriff's Department for their participation and as part of this process. They have a key component. It's not just the fire authority in their capacity to prevent prepare residents and fight the wildfires, but it's also ingress and egress out of the city, evacuation, and the Sheriff's Department made quite a impression upon residents and what they should and should not do, and I want to thank them for that. Probably have another one of these in the future. I'd recommend everybody come. I think it's invaluable information. I know I learned some things, and I've been on the front lines with the Sheriff's Department evacuating residents and directing traffic when we had the Santiago fire in Majesca Canyon. And the next item is the Villa Park Emergency Preparedness Training Program. That is a program, Steve, maybe.
Yeah, we just finished that. We had it on the 3rd and the 17th. Is that
yes.
14th? Yeah, 3rd and the 17th.
There
were about 17 to 18 people. OCFA put it on. I think Tom could probably answer more questions about it, but I think we heard from OCFA. It's pretty well attended and pretty well received.
There was a couple of people. Yeah, I had the advantage of having had a number of CERT classes, so I knew a lot of the information going in, but there was still some new material, and there was a lot of people there who had none of it prior. You know, simple things like learning how to turn your gas meter off.
How many people were there?
About 17, 18.
Okay.
They signed up for it. I'm Tom.
Right. And it was up to 30 we could have handled. Was it?
We could have 30. They'll do another one in the spring. I know, for instance, Wayne said in the spring he'll go because they broke it up into two morning sessions. And, you know, they really wanted people to go for the both of them, not just one or the other. And that's sort of people making that double commitment was a little hard at this time. So we'll do it in the spring again. OCFA has indicated, the Mayor Pro Tem asked if we could do it again springtime. So probably around March, April, we'll do it again. And OCFA's, they're great with it. They, you know, seem to really enjoy having it. And we'll try and push it more. And the more people out there saying things about it, the better off it'll be.
I did surprise them with one thing. Villa Park Community Services some time ago purchased a good number of these all safe signs to put out in your front yard, And we got to talking about it, and they said, what's that? And I said, oh, go get you one. So I brought a bunch of them in out of the trailer and passed them out. Some of these people had never gotten them.
Yeah, they haven't been passed out for 10 years.
Now, the one thing I learned from the one on the 25th of September is the fact that, you know, the fire authority will come out and do inspections of your homes just to check for
recharge,
you know, flammables around your house and ways, you know, steps you can take to reduce the fire hazard to your property, which I didn't know they did that, which that's one of the things I learned.
The gas company will come out and inspect mm-hmm. your
like
appliances.
Raking?
Yeah.
The other thing I would mention is that we've heard a lot of calls, and you're hearing about this too. Southern California Edison has adopted a new program. Basically, they'll shut down grids, and this is based on the Napa Valley fires, yep. where their wires went down and basically caused fires. So what they've done is they have the ability, statewide, they're cutting down. There are various power grids that they close down, and there's limits to what they can close and not close because of the way the wiring works, I don't understand completely. But we're in a certain grid that does have, in that, you know, if there's a risk. So in a high-risk area and high winds and things, they'll shut it down preemptively in advance of fires reaching there.
I heard there was a power outage just within the last week. Was that a,
one? And everyone was saying, were those preemptive?
Yeah, the one I know before
there
that was
absolutely
wasn't.
No preemptive shutdowns because right. they run through and right. they communicate real well when they're done.
Right.
And I get a phone call within minutes from Edison, nothing. This is not preemptive. We
right.
had a tree hit
okay.
a power transformer.
Yeah,
we had it for about an hour.
Well, we had more of that. We had them all over.
Well, the one that was before that, it was down about 8 hours.
Well, when winds hit heavy, you're going to have transformers going down, and that's what it was. I know the mayor pro tem called me and said, how come Portofino was still up,
right.
and they're in the same grid we are? And I said, well, I checked, and
right.
it was because they were hit with we were hit with a transformer power edge, and they were not.
Right.
The best advice I could say is if people can go on website, Edison has tried, and they're trying to, I understand the program, but we've said, you know, we've got residents that can't get out, and they're going to do it without notice if they have to. Their idea is it's for the greater good of trying to stop a bigger fire.
Right.
And they're trying to refine it, but they're doing it statewide, and it's one of those things you're fighting a monopoly, if you will, in Edison, and they do what they sort of want to do, and they're working through with you guys on it. But we've asked them if they could, Akram and I, the city engineer, we're fighting, because we have residents that can't get out without notice. You know, they need notice to lose electricity and things.
And one of the other components that is key to understand here that perhaps the approach that Edison took on this, and I think obviously public safety is our number one priority, everybody in this room and I would venture to say most people in Villa Park and the city council, is when you take a program like that where you're shutting down an entire grid in a preemptive strike to avoid down power lines that spark cause a fire, it doesn't take into consideration some older folks that either have mobility issues or health issues that rely upon
machines
that may have a limited battery backup. Most of these folks, I would venture to say, have significant battery backup, but nonetheless, there needs to be much greater transparency, and it's something that I'm working with Steve on this from the emergency side of the equation. And again, law enforcement is a key component and emergency preparedness. It's not just the fire authority, and that's why this component is within the LEAC umbrella here. I'm going to continue to work with SoCal Edison. This is a safety issue. It's a public safety issue. I actually went out in the field in support of many of my neighbors and checked on residences and folks I know that had issues the night that we had the major outage where there was about 8 hours that were down. And spoke with the line crew, and they called it, I believe it was a 322 event, or at least that's what the foreman thought it was, which was the preemptive strike. In fact, that was not the case. Steve was able to find out and confirm, and I confirmed with residents that we did actually have some transformers, or at least one transformer that was there, and that caused the
issue. You could have heard the bang.
The issue that I have is a lack of transparency and putting out information that is inaccurate, and it's like basically taking a finish nail if you're a carpenter and hitting it with a sledgehammer. Not a good idea. They need to be more pinpoint. They need to invest in their infrastructure. They need to figure out a way to do this. there's a better way to do it. And I understand their liability, and they're worried about going out of business because they're facing billions potentially.
Yeah, PG&E said they're not going to be able to come close to
state law was changed a few years ago. They can pass it on to the consumers.
Right, right.
You raise a problem because we just transferred our telephones to Spectrum. Mm-hmm. And okay, we've got cell phones, but we still have landlines. And we had no access on our landlines, but the power goes out.
Supposed to be a battery backup with that.
Right.
We don't have anything.
Well, that's Spectrum.
They're dead, so you have to, all we have is our cell phone.
That's weird.
The biggest
so
thing
they have know. A, they're supposed to be a battery backup?
The biggest thing we ran into is not so much when they took the power down. This, I'm talking about when they replaced the transformers. Mm-hmm. The 8-hour down, when they fired it back up, power surge took out our TiVo and our freezer. Mm. So we had to replace them both.
Yeah, people don't turn off their, they need to turn their stuff off when the power goes down.
Oh, we learned now
when it shoots
whenever,
back up, it'll
whenever
blow
we're
your
out
computer,
without
blow
power,
your
we go shut off the circuit breaker to the computers, unplug the freezer and the TiVo.
Invest the money in surge protectors.
Surge protectors.
Yeah. 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 Surge protectors.
Exactly. Highly, highly, highly recommend. Everybody has a surge suppressor.
How old was the freezer that took a dump from that?
Fortunately, it was 9 years and 6 months on a 10-year
warranty. I think
the
newer ones have surge protection already built into them.
The older panels, I was just telling them, older panels don't have the surge protectors built into them, but the newer ones will.
Well, even like the new appliances have a surge protection built into them.
This was 9 years, 6 months on a 10-year warranty.
Oh, yeah.
So we got it replaced for nothing.
So they did you a favor. They did you a favor.
That screwdriver that fell in there, right? Or the power.
Is there a surge protector system for your main panel? So
it depends on the house, your age of your house.
Even a newer house, even if you put in a brand new, say, 400 amp box, your individual circuit breakers are going to have what's called an arc fault feature, which is kind of a sensitive circuit breaker. But as far as having a main, surge suppressor, that's a whole different animal, and it's more expensive to put in there. And most people don't want to take up the room within the panel. But the arc fault feature typically takes care of that. And we have and the reason why I know this is because of the remodel that we just finished.
Okay, I'll get a hold of an electrician.
I was going to tell you that too, but
California is the only one requiring arc fault interrupters right now. But they were also the first ones to require GFCIs too. So it's just a matter of time before it. That goes nationwide.
Wayne, they're very sensitive, so sometimes they can be more of a burden than a blessing. So you might stick with just surge suppressors. Just word of the wise.
I'm doing this right now.
There you go. There you go.
All
That's
right.
All I have, gentlemen.
Just getting their keeps.
So let's move to G, committee member comments. If anyone's got anything to round table, now's your chance.
I would give you guys the street, but I'm going to have to point it out. This street right here between Orange and Bella Park. Do you guys know what that is? You know what it's just it's right that one portion of Orange that's stuck in there.
Oh, Kenwood? Between Mayberry and Providence?
Yes. I think that's it.
There's that one little
stretch. One little street.
A couple blocks.
It's for your guys. There's two sets of families living with you.
Two sets of...
I just saw it. Where'd you go? Sorry.
So Aberdeen.
Aberdeen, so down a little bit more. Locust.
The Locust is orange.
Yep. Locust, but it connects to Bill Park.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's two families that are living in a car.
Yeah, that's right.
Locust. So it gets probably reported to Orange, which I'm not gonna put Orange in any bad light, but they probably don't go pick it up. But I know that because I walk that all the time. The one lady on the corner there, she lives in Bill Park, she always asks me. Could you check that car right there, make sure everybody no one's in it?
Kind of cars.
It's a red Suburban, and I can't remember. One's a truck, a mid-sized truck. So they're there. I've right. seen them there a few times when I've been walking. She's asked. So they're not there all the time.
I'll have the homeless outreach teams put it on their route and see if they can make contact with them, and maybe we can
get
them in
the
services.
Yeah, I was going to tell you later, but I couldn't remember the street.
Yeah, there's only two streets that branch off that direction in the city of Orange.
And one, I think one of the, I think the truck has some, like, I think they go around collecting cardboard or something like that, you know. But I think she said that, you know, they like to fight. I've actually noticed them there. I just didn't think that there were, I just didn't actually think there were homeless there. But they're, like, literally parked right in the, you can tell, you know, obviously you can tell where Orange is and Bill Park is because, you know, the streets are different colors, but.
City limit line is right through the backyard.
Right.
Did you cover the how we're doing with the homeless situation generally in your report?
We did.
They nailed
Steve
it.
Covered that.
I'll catch up.
And yeah, I apologize. Anitu did not send these out, so I'll get them to you so that you can share them.
Is there any city that's going to appeal that Ninth Circuit case Boise. By chance? Are they going to appeal it?
Boise. It's going to go to the federal Supreme Court at a very expensive price in a very long time.
Yeah.
They can afford it better than we can.
Litigation will be very expensive. South County cities want to do it to state Supreme Court, but good luck. You know, I mean, it's a litigation expense.
Well, if it's already at the Ninth, if the Ninth already ruled on it, then it's going to have to bypass the state Supreme Court. Right?
It's a federal issue.
It depends on what kind of issue they bring up and what grounds they do. I mean, they can file an alternate suit. So that's just one set of court, you know. Anybody can sue at any time for any reason if they group them together. So it's going to be whatever. I mean, the ACLU is litigious, and they're going to go after whatever they feel is appropriate, and somebody's got to deal with them.
And the ACLU is looking for a reason to enjoin the South County cities in this lawsuit that's going on.
Yeah, they will be included. I mean, Judge Carter has indicated they're...
And that's because they're choosing not to do this.
They're choosing not to participate or do anything.
And so for the time being...
Their response is they don't have a homeless problem in South County. That's, if you talk to the city managers, they all say the same thing. We don't have a problem.
So they don't want to ante up any solution.
They're not going to deal with any money at this point. That's their choice and their decision, and their councils are on board. Now, I think we want to afford our law enforcement the best opportunity they have to have all the tools they have. So that's where we're all at.
Yeah, I think it's probably the lesser of both evils there. Yeah.
So they're not citing anybody in South County then for any homeless?
Not for the status offenses.
Sounds like Boise would save money if they just built a little bit more shelters rather than paying out all the legal
costs. For the OCCO's, on the meeting codes, for legal camping,
I mean,
for blocking
public access. It's the
lesser
of two evils, probably.
So they can arrest them for that?
You cannot.
You can't.
You can't.
They can't arrest them. That's the problem. Yeah. They can't arrest them. So... It's a challenge for law enforcement to, you know.
It's
you got to build the beds to arrest them.
And we're learning how to work within these new parameters.
Right.
And, you know, fortunately we have some deputies that are very persuasive, and at the same time they're able to, you know, talk to the homeless people and get up, talk a lot of them into accepting services and doing that. So it's an art. It's something I couldn't do, I tell you.
Yeah, I mean, our county has a whole 150 deputies now that... go around handling just that.
It requires a tremendous amount of patience.
Puckett was a big part of the success of getting them out of the
riverbed
and out. He's got that type of ability to, I think it's amazing.
Well, the laws, I think, are
that's what different. I was interested in. The 30 days are up. Are they still in all the motels? Or
no, there are no hotels at this point. They're placed elsewhere, and they're not gone, guys. They're in the streets. They're just not visible.
They're just not visible.
They're there. I mean, I don't, you know, you go in, you see them, and they're in residential areas and all over. I don't mean to, that's the reality. That's what I think was important to the North County cities. We got to deal with the problem, and we got to just understand that there's got to be some resources. Otherwise, it's an unrealistic solution for these guys.
Right.
They can't force the laws.
And getting back to the patience comment, it's not that the deputies don't have patience. It's sometimes the call volume that they have and the priorities that they have going on doesn't afford them the opportunity to have the patience necessary to spend an hour to 2 hours trying to coerce, coax, convince, call it what you want, somebody to accept resources. Oftentimes, you have to establish a rapport, take three or four different contacts and say, hey, I've seen you multiple times, you know.
But Placentia estimates, I was talking to a city administrator, who says 75 to 80% of their police calls for service are homelessness issues. I mean, and that's a challenge for those guys to deal with. And they're not, you know, the officers aren't trained. They've got other things, and they don't want to deal with that.
Right. Well, but very few of them are. And you're right, I've got two sergeants in four deputies that have gone through, you know, a majority of the training, and I'm trying to get all the HLOs, homeless liaison officers for the county, trained, and that's mostly one city putting them in, and it's there's a definite difference in the level of commitment. And it's you know.
But it's a case-by-case basis. I know the Mayor Pro Tem called me one time, and we were able to deal with one that he was familiar with, personally involved with, and help resolve it. But it involved his resources, my resources, getting someone else involved. It's a lot of phone calls, a lot of establishing rapport, and maybe it makes a difference, maybe it doesn't. But, you know, it's a lot of work, and it has to be done. I mean, it's a real problem. It's not a...
Yeah. A lot of the homeless people have substance abuse issues or mental health issues, and it's just being persistent and hitting them at the right time when they're accepted, you know, when
they
hit rock
bottom,
or they have the trust, or they're just ready. And that's one of the things that we work with our homeless outreach teams is they've got healthcare agency out with them, probation's out with them, and it's a team and it's a unique environment, and the sergeants are great at, you know, they have their own little resources and people that they know, churches that they can call that can get people in and you know, are accepting and willing to help. And just hitting that person at the right moment when they say, okay, help me out, I'm ready to go. And if you do it then and there and immediately, you're successful. If you don't, and you know, unfortunately they go and they get another drink in them, or they get some dope in them a lot of times, and they change their mind.
Fullerton has opened one of the things that, in addition to Placentia and Buena Park with the shelters that they're looking at, Fullerton has agreed to open, the city council agreed to open the armory again this year, with the one condition: there had to be an assessment team there, because they, just for that very reason, they can't just have a, this is not just a warehouse. Yeah. They want these people, you know, helping to solve problems as opposed to be just a warehouse. So I think that's sort of, you see the North County cities trying to deal with that and collectively understand there's a problem, and how do we, you know, it really is a big issue. It's not just, every city in the country will tell you the same problem about homeless. It's a huge issue that we're going to have to deal with.
That's out of control.
The North cities were very proactive in doing that, they were also quite successful in some of that knock, you know, some of the grant money that was available.
Just got some state money.
Yeah, so they were able to get a good portion of that, and it's because they're in the forefront and they're
I think we got eight out of the 14 million, or 9 out of the 14 million.
That's excellent.
Yeah. You know, all this problem is magnified since we brought mental hospitals. We need mental health services built back in. That's how we didn't have it years ago, was because we had places for these people.
Well, they went from mental hospitals when they closed those down. They went to jail, and now they don't not going there. So unfortunately, they're
back on the street.
They're back on the street. And it's, you know,
well, you would have never had a situation on the riverbed had Prop 47 not passed, because they would have been shooting their dope and going to jail, because the deputies would have been down there arresting them off of felonies. So.
I feel for those guys trying to deal with it.
So
we will be, just as a note, we'll be sending out, everybody should, or if they haven't gotten, if they're interested, because they renew up the membership for this year. I don't know, and we talked about this last time.
So yeah, I got something on that. So, okay. But I was going to wait until after we adjourned.
Okay, Kim Chaudhry from our office is sending out the renewals for everybody. And if you need to return them, and in January the council will re-up them, if you will.
Right.
John had mentioned it last time.
Right.
When are those going out? Because all I got was...
If your term's not expiring, you wouldn't get one.
Right.
My term is expiring, evidently.
Then you'll be getting those.
Since we're talking about it. Mine's expired, too, and I've done two-year terms. I'm stepping down.
If you've gotten a letter, it's expiring. If you haven't gotten a letter, it's not expiring.
I got a letter that says I'm expiring.
Okay, well, then you just have to send a note back to them saying...
Term, right?
Your history.
Because of a vacancy.
Yeah.
That's what I
figured. Can you email them?
All you got to do is, what I told them is, you can just sign the note saying I want to go back and hand it to Kim when you come down here, or send it, drop it in the mail.
Does she need anything if you're not coming back, or just ignore it?
You're not going to say that, John.
I'm stepping
we're
down.
We're not accepting yours.
Yeah, I'm stepping down.
You don't like us anymore.
No, it's just time for new eyes, new vision, you know?
You just send us a note, because we just...
Okay,
email's fine. Okay. An email's fine, guys.
Cool.
All we're trying to do is the mechanism to get some communication. That's all intended.
Okay.
So I'll just give you a heads up. It's not like we're trying to get rid of it. We just need to have that research.
I'll shoot you something, Steve.
We do not have any applications pending that I'm aware of.
There's some folks out there. I would encourage anybody that knows anybody within Villa Park to reach out to them, touch base with them. They have a law enforcement background. I think they would really enjoy this committee, as we all have. It's certainly not a burden. We only meet typically about once a quarter. Now that we've got things established, going in the right direction, we've gone through our growing pains, we're able to work on some smaller issues, because we've dealt with a lot of the larger issues, which is the education component. We've got the absolute phenomenal cooperation with the Sheriff's Department. and our PSRs and other community members and Neighborhood Watch has just done a phenomenal job of getting the word out there. So I think the tough sledding is somewhat behind us. Let's pray. Depends how they, obviously, if the economy turns, that could change things. You know, crimes of opportunity, people get more and more desperate. But please reach out to your law enforcement, current or retired, friends that live within Villa Park, and let them know. I've got a few that I'm going to reach out to. I think they're going to be very receptive. I think we may find one or two bodies, quote-unquote, for the committee. It goes without saying, though, I want to just, I don't know if this is any of the meeting, but I want to give my personal thanks and incredible gratitude towards John's leadership, his wisdom, yeah, his understanding, his
thank
patience.
You.
This thank committee you, would be nowhere without him. Absolutely nowhere.
I'm going to talk to Don thank and you. Ask Don to talk to you about staying on.
No,
Don. Down in Laguna.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not leaving that one. So
I'm going to talk to him and say, hey, John, yeah, you want to stay down?
He's going
to
give me a hard
city
sell.
City manager will yeah. give you a hard sell.
Yeah.
Take it lunch.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
We need to set a date for next meeting.
Yeah.
So quarterly or?
We've been meeting every other month, I think is how we've been trying to do it.
Yeah, but it worked out to be almost quarterly.
I think because right? we missed a month because of yeah. the summer. We
yeah.
skipped some time.
Yeah.
But I think the plan was to meet not until January, at least, so we haven't get through the holidays. I think John had suggested we meet it early November and then be done.
We'll have a new mayor pro tem, committee assignments, as far as the council goes, and then,
Do you want me just to send out a date when we get that and sort of say everybody do it? We don't have to try and set a date today.
I kind of like the 21st
of
January.
January.
The council won't have met at that point.
Because they have to meet to cut.
Yeah, they'll right? have to meet the fourth Tuesday. They won't meet till.
Sounds like February.
It's a holiday. It's Martin Luther King Day.
I don't know.
Yeah. City observes it.
I don't know what
we do. I think we should probably hold off.
But not, yeah, we We'll figure it out. I'll work with the mayor pro tem.
Yeah, let's hold off for
February
now.
February,
we kind of firm things up a little bit. I know everybody wants to plan ahead. Lord knows yeah. I want to plan ahead. But with apologies, I think it's probably in our best interest just to hold off rather than start pencilling in on everybody's calendar. But if we can firm some things up, I'll have Steve send out an email. We'll work together on that. Okay. LT, thank you for everything. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And honestly,
okay.
for
Thanks,
the
Sean.
Members of
yeah,
the
you're welcome.
Public,
thank you.
You know, I want to wish my personal congratulations to council member-elect Chad Zimmerman.
Sure.
You know, obviously he's got an interest in the way he's here right now, and appreciate him spending some time with us.
It's my third meeting, I think, I've been to in like a long time.
Nonetheless, thank you.
All right, we'll adjourn.